Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, Amnesty International says it has new gruesome video footage of extrajudicial killings in northern Nigeria.
These are actually authentic videos, and the people in the video are people who are believed to be Nigerian military officers as well as members of the civilian JTF.
And as companies in the United States prepare to unveil $14 billion in new investment in Africa, we ask whether Africa's role really is changing. This African analyst says the continent is still getting a raw deal.
Again, Africa is expected to supply the raw materials, not the finished product. Does this mean anything positive for the African states?
Stay with us for the next 25 minutes.
Top story.
The rights group Amnesty International has said it has acquired gruesome video footage, images and testimonies, which provide fresh evidence of war crimes, including extrajudicial killings in northeastern Nigeria. Amnesty said more than 4,000 people have been killed this year alone on both sides of the conflict between the Nigerian military and the Islamist militant group Boko Haram. Sam Olukoya reports.
In the report, Amnesty said Boko Haram is responsible for a series of assaults on local communities during which people were killed and towns and villages destroyed. It said in one attack, more than 100 people were killed, while 200 others were injured. I've been talking to eyewitnesses, some of them children, who say these accusations are true. 13-year-old Mary Elijah from Borno State said she and other members of her family witnessed her father and a pastor being killed when Boko Haram attacked their church.
They not catch our father. They not catch him. They not tie him. So they not shoot our father in his neck. They not shoot him in his stomach. Then they not shoot our father. They not burn him into ashes. They not burn our pastor into ashes. So when my mother, she saw our father, she was crying.
Another 13-year-old, Rachel Daniel, also from Borno State, witnessed the horror of her father being shot in the head.
My father was outside, my mother, she's inside the house. Then the Boko Haram come to my father's place. Then I shoot my father in his hair. Then people start running. Now see our father lie down, they already killed me. Then when I start crying, then police, then I come and carry my father to the scene, to the hospital, putting much worry.
Amnesty International says some Boko Haram attacks were carried out as punishment for local people who were perceived to have cooperated with the Nigerian military. However, the rights group says the Nigerian military is also guilty of war crimes and has carried out numerous extrajudicial killings of people it suspects of being Boko Haram members. A video released by the group on Tuesday shows men believed to be Nigerian soldiers slitting the throats of Boko Haram suspects. Mahmoud Kamara is a specialist on Nigeria with Amnesty International.
Videos are not doctored. These are actually authentic videos, and the people in the video are people who are believed to be Nigerian military officers as well as members of the civilian JTF. And we are calling on the Nigerian authorities to investigate this immediately and independently and to ensure that those who are responsible are brought to justice in the fair trial.
The JTF, which Kamara refers to, is a civilian joint task force set up to assist the military. In response to the accusations, the Nigerian military said they will be investigated. Military spokesman Major General Chris Olukolade said in a press statement that the scenes depicted in the video are alien to its operations and doctrines. If soldiers were found guilty of the crimes, they would be prosecuted, he added.
Sam Olukoya. Along with a chronic insurgency and persistent allegations of human rights abuses, Nigeria is also wrestling with a public health problem, namely the Ebola virus. Following the death of a Liberian-American man shortly after his arrival in Lagos late last month, Nigeria now has 8 suspected cases of the disease. 1 has been confirmed. Dr. Chikwe Iekwazu is an infectious disease epidemiologist. I asked him if more cases were reported, where were the gaps in Nigeria's defences against the disease that needed to be stopped?
It's a very complex situation because the challenges are not just with the health system. The first case that got into Nigeria actually arrived through the international airport in Lagos. But the truth is that we've got porous borders all across the country. We're bordered by 5 countries across West Africa. I think 90% of the traffic is by road, motorcycles, bicycles, and on foot. So right now we're focusing a lot on the airports, but I really don't think that that focus is justified, despite the first case having come in through that airport. The virus and the outbreak we're facing really will challenge our health system in complex ways. So the best case scenario for us is still to detect the cases early and try and stop transmission from happening in the country.
You mentioned land borders. Would it make sense to close those borders?
You know, you could argue that they could be closed, but in reality, it would be very difficult to do that. Our borders are vast. So even if there was an order to close the borders, to actually implement that would require a huge deployment of resources across the country. So I think some old school, hardcore epidemiology is really what we need at the moment.
From your knowledge of Nigeria and of the Ebola virus, do you see this disease spreading quickly?
It really depends. You probably know Nigeria is the most populous country in Africa, is densely populated. There are 2 big problems with an Ebola outbreak. One is the devastation caused by the outbreak itself. The other bit is almost as worrisome as the virus, is anxiety that it causes. In reality, the Ebola virus is not really one of our most transmissible viruses. It's only transmitted by body fluids. It can really be contained if you do simple things properly. But the truth is, those simple things sometimes are very difficult for us in Nigeria. So there is a real risk of transmission.
You said doing simple things. What things were you referring to?
If you have a patient in a hospital, you have to observe very strict infection control. So that means wearing a glove all the time, even if you don't know the patient has Ebola or has any other infectious disease. You have to use a new glove with every new patient all the time, a very tight control with syringes that you've used on patients. Secondly, you have a good team of trained epidemiologists that understand the old art of tracking down patients, instructing them on their practices, on what to do and how the virus is transmitted. You need to have experts in risk communication. How do you inform the people on what they need to do, but not cause anxiety? So give good information in a balanced and accurate way. Because if we're faced with an outbreak and an anxious public at the same time, then we really are in trouble.
Infectious disease epidemiologist Dr. Chikwe Iekwazu.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
At the US-Africa Summit in Washington on Tuesday, African and US companies and the World Bank have pledged $17 billion in new investment for Africa. African leaders, meanwhile, have urged the US to renew the African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA, which gives African exporters preferential treatment on the US market. But after all the talking, are any binding agreements with African states expected to emerge from this summit? Philip Santner put that question to Richard Schaber, deputy head of Germany's Konrad Adenauer Foundation in Tanzania.
I assume some decisions will be taken and maybe some contracts signed, but I think our biggest question is, how is the implementation going to be? Because here are heads of state or heads of government meeting the U.S. Administration,
Now, they may agree on something, but then they have to sell it back home, depending on the nature of the structures at home, whether the head of state can just sway and convince everybody, or whether the parliament has a say, or whether the citizens have a say. So something will happen, but the key concern should be the implementation of whatever is agreed.
AGOA, the African Growth and Opportunities Act, bound to end in 2015, and it's to be renewed by the Congress. Is this really a Growth and Opportunities Act that is needed in African countries, or how do you see it?
It is an opportunity. The only problem is most of the states in Africa, I think, we are not ready to meet the standards and requirements of AGOA, and other countries which were not supposed to benefit from it outside the African continent took advantage of it and used the African continents to get their products abroad. But as an opportunity, it's a good one, and it's a big challenge for African states. They have a chance to enter a market which they would never, under normal circumstances, enter, and they would never have such a political support to enter such markets. But all they need to do is put their house in order in terms of production quantity and production quality and timely delivery.
Where does Europe come in? Now talking about America and China, which is also a big player, has Europe lost out in the international battle for African attention?
I wouldn't say so, because let's look at Europe. I mean, the former colonial masters, these states have still links to these former colonies. And one should not forget, colonialism in terms of imperialism died, but the trade links or trade dependency is still very strong. So Europe can drive a few things and has a chance to do so, because when they came as colonialists, they created an economy which was depending on Europe getting raw material from the African state. Now, the current situation, whether you look at America, Europe, or China, again, Africa is expected to supply the raw materials, not the finished product. Does this mean anything positive for the African states, or it's another opportunity for them to supply and not develop? Because once you supply your raw materials, and once they are over, you are done. Former leaders like Mwalimu Nyerere or Kwame Nkrumah, he'd warn everybody that, okay, we have our flags or flag independence, but the biggest war is going to be the fight for our own economic liberalization.
Richard Schaber, deputy head of Germany's Konrad Adenauer Foundation in Tanzania, talking to Philip Santner.
Africa on the move.
With inflation running at 15%, Ghana is facing an economic crisis. So it's perhaps not surprising that, in more difficult times, Ghanaians are looking for ways to do business more efficiently. One option is the online marketing platform, not necessarily the big international ones, but Ghanaian platforms for Ghanaians. Here's Isaac Kelechi with this week's Africa on the Move.
A typical traditional market in Ghana's capital Accra. Traders and customers hustling to conclude business deals in a rather chaotic atmosphere. But this type of doing business is slowly fading, thanks to an emerging online market in Ghana, following the footsteps of global online shops like eBay, Amazon and others. Ghana has come up with its own online marketing platforms such as Tonaton.com and Kaswa.com. Mavis Mahama sells plastic products in Tema and advertised her products on one of the online trading platforms. She says sales have been significantly higher ever since.
I've exhibited some of my plastics over there. So when you need it, you just give me a call, the particular type you want, and I'll bring it to you where you are. It's easy and it's not so stressful like going to the market looking for a particular product to buy. It has increased my sales.
Lawrence Ajiman also bought a motorcycle from another online trading platform recently and speaks well of the benefits.
They are useful. I just bought a motorcycle and I got myself a good deal. So I got to make the deal from my office. You know, I didn't go to town. Actually, the person rode the bike to my office. So I inspected the bike on my office premises and everything.
Kaswa.com, actually, Kaswa in Hausa means market. So Kaswa.com, we are creating a marketplace where we allow buyers and sellers to meet to trade.
That's Derek Yabua, the chief operating officer of Kaswa.com, an online marketplace in Ghana, which has been operating since last year. Almost 1 million Ghanaians do online trading at Kaswa.com without paying a fee. At his small office in Accra, Derek describes how the online market works.
If you want to sell your item, we basically need a few steps. When you log on to Kaswa.com, you have where you post your ad for free. And there, you just need to take a picture of the item. I mean, that actually makes the item sell fast. You choose the area where you are so that the person can easily find you. If you're looking for an item to buy as well, you log on to Kaswa.com. For instance, if you are in Accra, you select Greater Accra and you have items that are listed in Greater Accra and you can choose from different varieties. So that's how easy it is to use Kaswa.com.
Derek says online business has opened new possibilities and that opportunities, especially for the young entrepreneurs, are limitless.
I think there is a much bigger opportunity for online business in Ghana. And I think that the youth now must take the opportunity to have something to do. There is a market opportunity for it.
Business analyst Elvis Ajete is also excited about the opportunities the online trading platform system in Ghana offer users.
The seller gains a lot in terms of advertising his or her products and services for free. And again, the reach, because that is also crucial. There are no limits. There are no boundaries. For the buyer, as I said, it's also a matter of convenience. And it's also less expensive for you to access that same product and services now because of the online business platforms that we have.
But there are still some hurdles with online shopping in Ghana. As Nanae Chia explains, her father was almost tricked by unscrupulous businessmen.
It was a car, and a picture that he saw there, when he went to look at them, at their cars, it wasn't as he saw. So he had to actually come back home, and he didn't buy the thing.
Nevertheless, the industry keeps growing daily as millions of Ghanaians wish to sell and buy items online right from their homes using a computer or a mobile phone are able to do so with ease.
That report was compiled by Isaac Kalichi in Accra. Next to Mozambique, the Frelimo government and the Renamo opposition have now agreed on the final wording of a peace deal they intend to sign in the next few days, sources in Maputo have told Deutsche Welle. Earlier, agreement had been held up by differences over how the deal would be monitored. I asked Johannes Beck, head of DW's Portuguese service, how much suspicion still existed between Frelimo and Renamo, formerly civil war opponents.
I think there's still a lot of suspicion. There are some hardliners on both sides. But in the last months, the soft approach has made some gains because there haven't been that much attacks from Renamo. They actually stopped attacking buses and lorries and cars on the national route number one. And Frelimo has been much softer in its approach on talking about Renamo's desires to have a stronger participation in the army and in the police forces. So I think they are on a good way.
So there's going to be plenty of progress towards reconciliation in the months leading up to the elections in October.
And after the elections as well, because one of the big issues after the peace agreement in 1992 in Rome was that Renamo hasn't had a disarmament of its forces. So they still had a couple of hundreds of men with arms, and it was declared as a private security force for Afonso Lacama, the party leader. But this issue has to be resolved. So there has to be, and this is one of the objectives in the agreement, there has to be a complete disarmament of Renamo forces. And this is going to take place in the next months, and it's not something that's going to be resolved in a couple of days or weeks.
Johannes Beck, head of DW's Portuguese service.
Making a difference.
Social commentary has always been the hallmark of Malian music, so it should come as no surprise to find out that rap has made major inroads in the local music scene. At best, rap is incisive, and one young Malian rap star is currently at the top of his game. Bram Posthumus went to see him at home in the capital Bamako to find out how he is trying to make a difference through his music.
Mohamed Soumounou was born 27 years ago in the same poor suburb of Bamako where he still lives. When he went to school, walking through the steep and stony streets of Daoudabougou, he would dream up little poems in his head and then write them up next to the drawings he made. When one of his cousins gave him an electronic beatbox, young Mohamed started putting his poems to the beat. The year was 2000. 8 years later, he created his first album.
I talk about me, about the past, and about family and African society.
De la société africaine.
On fait des jeux de jambes. C'est comme ça, Bamako. Tout le monde est hypocrite. Si on te lance un sourire, ça veut dire que t'as du fric. Dans ma petite ville, tout le monde a eu l'éducation physique. En cas, si on devient président.
Si chaque parent arrive à éduquer ses enfants.
If parents manage to educate their children and send them to school, well, they can become police officers, presidents, ministers. And if you have an educated population, it will be the end of police officers demanding money from travelers or civil servants asking money for an ordinary document. Those are the kinds of messages I put in my work.
Donc c'est ce genre de message que moi j'essaie de passer dans les morceaux.
Milmo's message is one of awareness, religious tolerance and being proud of your historical roots as Malians. As Milmo's career took off, Mali's situation went from bad to worse. Corruption, insecurity, and then in 2012 a failed Tuareg rebellion, a coup, and the jihadist invasion. Milmo had to respond.
Et Milmo a essayé de suivre.
I tried to follow the situation. I tried to follow all the events that were taking place in my country. So immediately after the coup, I released a song called Curfew.
Sorti un son qui s'appelle Couvre-feu. Hey, capitaine, a kingale ara
yaninga madaso. Be dabali bane no bene sigile mbolobida. He recorded a series of songs that chronicle all the milestones in Mali's turbulent last 2 years. And then,
j'ai fait un autre son.
I made another song for the presidential elections. I wanted to impress upon Malians to vote, but not in return for tea or t-shirts, but for someone who could manage the country.
Gérer le pays.
3 albums, a planned tour in Mali and then the West African region. Milmo is at the top of his game. And long may he continue.
Hey, oh,
Bram Posthumus reporting there. And if you enjoyed that report, you might like to know that Making a Difference returns at the same time next week.
Analysis, background, information and more. Log on to dw.de, your first choice on the web.
And before we leave you here on Africa Link, a reminder of our main stories. Amnesty International says it has acquired gruesome video footage showing what appears to be extrajudicial killings by the military in northern Nigeria. In Washington on Tuesday, African and US companies and the World Bank have pledged $17 billion in new investment for Africa. And a peace deal is expected to be signed in Mozambique in the next few days. Remember, there are 3 ways to get in touch with the Africa Link team here at the Deutsche Welle in Germany. You can send a text message to country code 49160 957 59510, an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110. Bonn, Germany. Remember, we're back again at the same time tomorrow. I do hope you can join us then. Until then, this is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.